For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league. We talk FA Trophy, second round action with 40 ties. We talk to two sides involved and focus on clubs with joint managers as the season begins to get super busy. First up, Anthony Johnson, now joint manager at Radcliffe, has had an amazing start to the season in the Northern Premier League, which he admits is the focus for him and Bernard Morley. But who turned down an FA Trophy run with a trip to National North Farsley Celtic this weekend between them and round three? Enjoying home advantage in his FA Trophy tie, Jamie McClurg, joint manager at Bracknell Town. And after reaching the FA Cup first round already this year, they face fellow FA Cup first rounders Horsham in a step three battle that he says that both he, his fellow manager Carl Withers, and his squad are looking forward to, with a side in a rich vein of form. Executive editor at the Non-League paper, John Couch, helps with the week's news around the FA Cup, FA Vars, FA Trophy, clubs in trouble, managers in and out, and much more besides, as well as previewing this weekend's Non-League paper. So there is plenty to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So let's get some managerial insight then. It is the FA Trophy again this weekend, the second round proper. 40 ties with £3,750 in prize money on the table for the winners. £1,000 for those whose weekend doesn't end so well. So no replays here. And if it's a draw on the 90 plus minute mark, because no one ever plays a game of 90 minutes nowadays, then penalty kicks will decide it. So I thought let's kick off with an old friend of the show, in a new role since we last spoke with him, and who saw his side through to this stage via spot kicks the last round. It's a warm welcome to the Non-League Football Show, a joint manager at Radcliffe FC, Anthony Johnson. Welcome back, Jono.
Hello, pal.
Good to have you back on. Let's start with that last round. 2-2 normal time against FC United in front of a crowd of, what, nearly 1,400 people. You won 5-4 on penalties. That's some pretty calm kick takers, it sounds like.
Do you know what? They were probably the five best penalties I've ever watched live in my whole life. Of them five penalties, I think we had two centre-halves. One had never scored a goal in his career. The other one was a centre-forward that was making his second appearance of the season.
Wow.
So everything pointed towards us not being successful. And to be, I'll be honest with you, I had it to the loo at the 90th minute. I've gone inside, come back out, and our assistant, Steve, had gone through the penalty takers with the lad, seen him winning. I looked at the list and I thought, oh my gosh, we've got no chance here. The best five penalties I've ever seen, mate. Absolutely unbelievable. And if you've been to FC, the big old terrace stand where the majority of the singers are behind the goal, they were all there. So a lot of pressure on it. And fantastic, absolutely brilliant.
And what about you as an experienced manager? Do you watch them? Do you bite your lip? Do you turn around? How do you take penalty kicks?
I pretend I'm not bothered, right? So
you
I'm not
always really... pretend you're not bothered.
Yeah, but in reality, I'm shaking as much as the next man. Obviously, we were, in that game itself, we were 2-0 up. We'd had a few injuries, made a few changes, and FC came on really strong, really impressive second half. Got it back to 2-2. And generally, what tends to happen is the momentum of the side that have been down end up sort of winning the game, don't they?
Yeah.
But we were fantastic. I'm watching the penalties going. As I say, I weren't. I'm totally honest, I'm looking at the penalty takers thinking, I don't fancy this one. But every single one was as good as you've seen. And to be fair, with our keeper, Mateus, in goal, you know, if he guesses the right way, he's going to make a save. He's that good. So we were always confident more to do with our goalkeeper than the actual takers. But I remember saying the last thing I said to the lads, look, make your decision and stick with it. That's it. It's, I know it sounds simplistic, but that's the only thing I said to the lads. Whatever you decide to do now or on the walk-up, don't change your mind based on the keeper or the crowd. And as I said, they were fantastic composure.
And I'd back that up from experience as well. I did that once. It didn't turn out very well. I changed my mind as I was walking up. But anyway, I think probably they cope so well with it, though, because big crowds aren't something unusual at Radcliffe at the moment, are they? You're top of the Northern Premier League. You're 10 points clear, but you've had, what, looking at those home crowds, four in excess of over 1,000, many just shy of that mark, all of them over, what, 400. And I sense there's a real buzz of excitement around the whole club.
Well, one of the big things when we took the job, because we're both local lads, you know, I live a mile and a half from the ground. Bernard lives half a mile away. One of the big things we knew we could do being local again was drawing the crowds in, the people that know us. And I think we're in quite a fortunate position where we're surrounded by Bury, Bolton, City United, Burnley, Blackburn, all these different clubs. And we seem to have a lot of floating supporters, even Salford fans, Ramsbottom fans, all coming watching because they've got some either affiliation to the town or to me and Bernard. So I think the crowds last season, the average was about 750, which was fantastic for Ratcliffe because I remember when they used to get 150 on, yep. You know, 10, 15 years ago. So the fact that they were averaging 750 last season was phenomenal in itself. But to see four figures regular, I think we're averaging 1,200 at this moment. I mean, don't get me wrong, we've had FC United and Macclesfield both at home. That we've got our own organic growth in terms of support that are coming to watch the team. You know, it's not up and down like you can see with some clubs where once a week you might be getting 1,000, next week it's 500. We're maintaining, as you said, around the four-figure mark. And even when we played in the Manchester Cup, when we put all the under-21s out, we got nearly 500 on, which blew our mind. And I was a bit disappointed, really, that we didn't give the supporters that did turn up more of an opportunity to witness a better performance from us. So the crowds have been fantastic. They really bought into what me and Bernard spoke about before the season started. And to be fair, the players, the performances, the goals scored, what the lads have done in the trophy as well has kept them coming back. Mm.
And as you say, yourself and Bernard, you know, both local lads, you know, Bury-born boys, handful of miles between you. When the opportunity came up at the very end of last season, how long did it take for the two of you to decide that this was the next job for you?
I think after the first meeting with the owner and the chairman, I've been out for 10 months. Obviously, you know, most people are aware that I've got my own coaching company. Burns got his own business in the building trade. And I was really happy, in a happy place with my life outside of managing a football club. Bobby had done a really good job. Bobby Grant had done a good job. And they just missed out. I think they had a poor end to the season. And between the owner and the chairman and the manager, decided to part ways. We got the call. We got the... saw the advertising, put our names in, we got the call to go and have the chat with them. And I knew, I mean, we was in there for 4 or 5 hours and I wanted to, I don't need to talk about what you're going to back us with in terms of budget. I need to hear that the ambitions, the community-based things that they've talked about in the past are all coming to fruition. They took us down to the ground, they showed us and explained to us how they built the club over the last 7 years, the infrastructure behind it all. At this moment now, we're probably a couple of months away from a new training facility across the road being built for the whole junior setup and the first team. It's phenomenal, the work that's gone in terms of the regeneration of the town, just from the football club in Ratcliffe. Because it's quite a deprived area in terms of what a lot of the other smaller towns around Bury are. How it's picked the town up, it's give opportunities to young footballers, it's give opportunities for jobs in the local area. It's been absolutely unbelievable. If someone had said to me 6-7 months ago it was going to look like this, and I'm not even talking about what we're doing on the pitch, if someone had said to me this is what I was going to look, I couldn't have believed them. But everything that the owner and the chairman had said to me in Bernard back in May, they've gone over and beyond.
And it's good to hear as well you're picking up those floating voters as well, floating supporters. It's a real hotbed of football where you are, but that must make it hard to compete for fans, compete for players too, because, what are you, 7 miles or so from the centre of Manchester, 3 from Bury, you say all those other clubs around here. And I think Ratcliffe itself, what, 35,000 people, if that? And so those facilities, you know, we'll get onto that in a minute, that's got to be a real carrot to enable you to sort of swell your squad and get lads that want to play for you.
It's a double-edged sword because there's so many football clubs in this area around us at the levels that we're at. We're all in the same pool of players that we're trying to sign. And the players understand and know that as well. But the other side, the flip side of it, and the double-edged sword side of it, is that the location being in Manchester, the transport, the access to motorways and things like that. I mean, our last two clubs were at Spedding and Chester. Yeah. So you're always asking lads, unless they're from the local area to travel. At Manchester, you can probably look 25 miles in every direction and you can be there in half an hour. So that was massively important when we decided whether we wanted to get back in or not. The next club had to be in a position where ultimately we knew where we were. We felt comfortable talking to players that weren't travelling 2 hours, because we've tried that, we've done it, and in a lot of ways it did work, but also you get players that are sat in a car for 2.5 hours for a home game, and it negates the advantage that you're building. But we are getting them supporters. We don't have any, Rackers don't have any real rivals, you know, because they've come through the leagues, as I said, slowly and organically over the last couple of years, or the last few years, since the owner and chairman have been there. So it's been built properly. But people have seen us as their second club. And what we're hoping is, we're not bothered if we become your first club, but make sure that you keep coming back every other week. So the way we look after them on a match day, the football that we provide for them to watch is what I'm hoping keeps, you could have voted before, but you're 100% right. Supporters vote with their feet. You know, if they're not enjoying what they're seeing or being treated properly, then they'll disappear and go elsewhere. So we've got to keep them there.
Yeah, well, because of course, Stainton Park was shared with Bury AFC until their merger with Bury and their move back to Gig Lane. So no disrespect to you guys, but it must be like almost being the kid with the black and white TV on the road while your neighbour's got some sort of HD LED and they can attract the fans back there. But as we all know, it's the content that's the winner, and you've clearly proven that this year.
Well, we've said from day one, we've been doing it 15 years. Bernard never thanks me for saying that because he's still in his 30s, but we've been doing it for 15 years. And the one thing I've said was, if we go back in, because it's the first time we'd ever had any time out, I want to go back to enjoying football how it used to be when we first started. That was fearlessness, not having that fear of losing a game of football. If it's won on the last 10 minutes, even if we're 4 hours away from home, like at Morpeth the other night, let's go and try and win. But let's do it in a way that's swashbuckling and enjoyable and exciting. And we've said to the lads, I've said it plenty of times in our interviews, both of me and Bern have said the same thing. Don't worry about the against column. That's on us because of the way we set you up. Just go and get bodies in the box, create chances, go and enjoy it, get in the final third. And you'll have to look at the goals column, the goals for column.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, goals appear to be part of your success, don't they? I think you've got, 50 in 16 league games already this season. You scored in every one of those league games too. And whilst you've got the two lads that have got 9 goals apiece, there's clearly goals from everywhere across the field as well. And I sense that's because you do, that swashbuckling, you encourage everybody to get out and just give it a go.
Well, up until Saturday, Anthony Dudley and Jordan Newman were both our top scorers, hadn't scored for a combined 16 games. They're two forwards, and yet we were still scoring threes and fours. So every single player that's poured on a shirt, this is an unbelievable fact, it blows my brain every time I tell someone it, but every single player that's poured on a shirt, outfield player, has been involved in a goal, either an assist or a goal. And that's 19 players.
And point in fact, I mean, check it out on social media, but your first goal midweek, that 3-2 win over up at Morpeth, as you said, I mean, check this video out. It starts at the back. There's movement, there's passing, the ball does the work. And I think there's 9 players that touch the ball in the move before it ends up in the back of the net.
Well, we play with purpose. We don't keep the ball for the sake of keeping it. I hate that nonsense. I always remember the Guardiola team at Barcelona. I used to watch them in 2008. This is boring. It was boringly good, but it was boring because they dominated so much. And we play with a real purpose. If we can go long and play a longer pass into the channel, that's fine, as long as there's an option running ahead. But we want to entertain. And you spot on with that goal that we scored. It was a mirror image of the one we scored last Saturday against Gainsborough 2, where 7-8 players involved in 8, 9, 10 passes. And sometimes you miss. Mm. But we're getting bodies in the box where the percentage of chance of scoring the goal because the amount of lads we've got in there rises. So we went 1-0 behind. 2 minutes later, we scored that type of goal because we don't panic. We don't worry. It's not a problem. Even if they score another one, just keep doing what we do and it'll eventually come. And if it doesn't, no problem. We'll just put it right in the next game. And that's been our ethos all through the season so far.
Yeah, you managers always talk about small margins and, you know, you need a little bit of luck. But you have to create your own luck, don't you? If you're not in it, how can you win it?
Well, it goes back to what I said to you at our last job, coming off the back of Chester, going to Spennymoor. We used to travel a long way and the game might be tight and you'd be tempted to set up not to lose. Mm. And that goes totally against me and Bernard as people, as football people. But we felt like we didn't want to take the risk in case you didn't pick up the point. Mm. And when I look back at it now, and I'm massive on reflection, I would much rather lose having a go at trying to win than being boring, trying not to lose.
And does that help being closer to home now? So, you know, before I remember you saying that, you know, it was nice. You had that travel time, that thinking time. You haven't got that travel time, thinking time. What do? Walk around the block several times before you get to the game?
Yeah, well, it's probably more a case of being able to get together early in the morning, not having to travel. Yeah. So I'll go and meet Bernard, we'll go and have something to eat and the rest of the staff and we'll discuss it. But I think the bigger thing is the time you're spending with the lads. So, I mean, the Spennymoor lads were the best lads I've ever worked with. They were an unbelievable group of people. But you never got time with them. You literally had a couple of hours before the game when they were arriving before the game, they're thinking about the match. You're not getting to socialise. You're having a couple of hours after the game. Then you've got training, which is always serious. So there's never that socialising aspect because you've got to get back. So this time last year, this time two years ago, when we took the Spennymoor job, for an 8 o'clock training session, we're leaving home at 3 and not getting back till 1 o'clock in the morning. So everything was very stressful just because the time limit that you had with people, it was all about football. Whereas back at home, we, one of the recruitment drives that we did with the lads was we wanted all of them to be linked. So they've either played for us in the past or they played with one of the players in the past. So every player coming in knew somebody previously, either through playing or through being at previous clubs. So, and that's worked a treat for us. So you learn, you live and learn. You keep saying we're experienced managers, absolutely. But you're only experienced if you learn from your past failures of what you didn't do right. So we've definitely got things right this year. We've failed a couple of times with certain things, but you live and learn.
Yeah. And you talk about living and learning. We often talk about non-league being the potential for a Hollywood blockbuster on this show. You almost kicked that off with the Salford documentary, and it's since been replicated by Wrexham. But, I mean, you've got Bernard Manning Jr. still a major shareholder director, and I'm sure he's got a very useful contacts book. But also no Oscar-winning director Danny Boyle as well. He's a Radcliffe boy, born boy, isn't he? Surely Radcliffe, the movie... is out there. Maybe even Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe, as the narrator. Is it in the pipeline?
Well, there was an episode came out a couple of weeks ago after we played Macclesfield because they're doing their documentary. And that was a fantastic ending, let me tell you, when we beat them 4-3 after being 3-0 down. But them days are gone. Listen, we had an amazing journey. But what if someone had told me 10 years ago what we've been through with the Salford stuff. Mm. But it's great to see other clubs jumping onto it. Listen, we talked about the crowds before. Do you know what's unbelievable from when we started back in 2008, 2009 is the crowds now in non-league football all up and down the country from the northeast down to the south west. The numbers are, because I think people are seeing it now for what it is. Mm. It's not just a TV programme on a Sunday afternoon or a Tuesday night with being the Champions League. People can come down, they can live it for 4 or 5 hours around the ground before the game, after the game. The kids are involved. It's an amazing time to be non-league football, and it's so... probably going to contradict myself really here, but what I'm going to say, but it's so professionalised now compared to what it used to be like.
And you're finding fans, non-league fans have always been more educated in sort of understanding their clubs and that sort of thing, but I just feel that fans that go to non-league football now are so passionate about the game, about the managers. Yes, you still get abuse, I'm sure, particularly from the opposition, but people want to learn about the game, and that's why they're at non-league.
Everything's changed. Even us as managers, what we were like 14, 15 years ago, the fact that we've got these unbelievable people at the top of the game now, everybody's trying to replicate what they're doing. And that can only be a good thing. Players trying to play the right way. The pitches nowadays. I played 20 years ago in non-league football. This time of year, there was no green on the pitch. It was just mud.
I had a game called off at my club the other week, and there was a metre square off the field that it was called off for because that was dangerous. And there were a few comments that, you know, back in the day, that probably would have been played on that pitch. But things have changed, haven't they? And as you say about the facilities that are going on at Radcliffe, it was a few years ago, I remember seeing the blueprint to the Radcliffe Juniors training field, wasn't it? That you're going to sort of redevelop and make it really a professional setup that you'll have there.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And you're probably talking 100 yards from the ground to where this is being built. I mean, it's not quite ready yet, so we're training on the other side of Manchester still. But it's great. The floodlights are up now. I think I was talking to the chairman today that he believes that we'll probably be open for the juniors to be on there in January. And that's what it needs. What it needs is that footprint of Radcliffe, the badge, being in the middle of town. When we was at Chester, there was the talk about the same thing, and that's from running in Chester now. They've got a badge in the middle of one of the biggest estates in the northwest of England, in Blakenham, where people are walking past. They're not seeing a Man City, a Liverpool or a Man United badge. They're seeing Chester. Mm. And that can only help with the community-based stuff, with young people growing up as Chester fans, as Radcliffe fans, rather than Chelsea, Man City and Blackburn fans. We want them coming back and supporting the football club as well as supporting, obviously, their town.
Yeah, and it's a win Saturday. Let's bring back to the trophy. That'll be the club's best ever run in the trophy. Equal the club's best ever run. I know you won't turn a cup run down, and even a potential of a Wembley appearance. But is promotion the ultimate aim this season?
Yeah, and listen, it wasn't something we spoke about at the beginning of the season, but just purely based on who were in our league. Mm. You'll have to look down the table to see the might of Macclesfield and Robbie Savage knocking about. I think he's had a massive culture shock. But because where we obviously talks turn to maintaining that and what it looks like in the future. But because of the way things are going off the pitch, that it speeds things up a little bit and our ambitions and expectations change. However, there's nothing better, I know it's cliche, there's nothing better than a cup run to go alongside it. And we've had a tough start. We had Whitby at home. We were flying, had an unbelievable FA Cup run. Then we got FC United away. And now we've got a team from a league above. That's what we wanted. I absolutely detest cup draws when we get pulled against the same flipping teams year on year from your same league. And I know they can't do anything about it. I understand it's regionalised. So to get Farsley, someone who me and Bernard played against God knows how many times from the league above, who were doing really well in the league above, a few points off the playoffs, gives us a proper test. So win, lose or draw, for the first time this season, the pressure's off us. But, you know, on the inside of the camp, we expect to win every single game. We've got a good squad. We've got a good group of players. So we'll go and give it a go. Then you're in the hat on Monday if you get the win. And, you know, if you're in the FA Trophy on the other side of Christmas, you're talking the last 32 in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Exciting times. With all that in mind, though, what are your first thoughts post-match on Saturday, whatever the result, to check on Warrington Rylands against Worksop, the third against second in your league?
Yeah. It's worked out really well, the fact that we're not playing in the league and they're playing each other. So, something's got to give one way or another. Then I think we play a game in hand on Tuesday night when them two don't play. So, nothing better than going sort of taking a bit of a break from league action with the pressure off you in a trophy game and knowing that second and third have played each other. So, if there's anybody up there, the football gods are listening, give me a nice little draw and I'll be more than happy.
Well, there's nothing better than speaking to you on the Non-League Football Show. It's been great to get you on. I better leave you to go and prepare for the weekend. But, Jono, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We'll speak to you again soon.
Sup, man.
So let's stay with the FA Trophy and the Joint Manager Brigade, another friend of the show. Carl Weathers and Jamie McClurg have been making names for themselves in management for quite a while at Binfield and now Bracknell Town, and this season is no exception. Bowing out of the FA Cup in the first round to league opposition, having already beaten the National League side live on the telly, they've hit form in the Southern League Premier South 2 and now host fellow FA Cup heroes Horsham in the FA Trophy this weekend. To find out if it is as fun as it sounds, let's give a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Joint Manager at Bracknell Town, Jamie McClurg. Good to have you back.
Hello, Tim. How are you? All right?
Yeah, good. And obviously not as good as you, because let's chat about that FA Cup first. A fantastic performance and victory on the BBC Red Button to defeat Dagenham and Redbridge. And then an equally great performance, but just not the result, losing 2-1 at Cambridge United. Yeah, moments like that, some managers never get, but you two seem to pick them up like pick a mix.
Yeah, it's, I don't know if it's just pure luck, but we've had a lot of success in the FA Cup and Trophy and the Vars, to be fair. I mean, we also had Havant on that run-in before Dagenham, which was like a great game to have them at home. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like the team, the management have all like come together, and yeah, we just, there's something special about the games. And I feel like, yeah, if you do your homework and you get everything right on the day, then yeah, you never know. Things can happen. And Cambridge was amazing. It was nice to go away to a ground like that and test yourself against like real tough opposition, and good luck to them in the next round. I think they've got Fleetwood. Mm. But yeah, it was a real strange feeling, because obviously as a youngster, I was around when Bracknell played Lincoln like 23 years ago. And then we had Ipswich and everything like that last year. And this is like completely different. Ipswich was an anomaly, like, the management and the way they're set up, which we went and saw a few weeks before Cambridge, is amazing. And yeah, to go away to Cambridge and put on the performance for the fans and the club, and yeah, we're really proud of what we've done. But strangely, I was a little bit sad on the day, like a bit choked, because things didn't go our way, and I just felt like we might get a replay and have another chance to get into round two, but we didn't, and it was one of them things. But yeah, I couldn't have been more proud of the boys.
But when the games are so quick and fast after each other, do you actually get a chance to reflect and learn from those moments, or is that going to have to wait till the end of the season?
I think each game, I think I look back 2 weeks later, I reflect on it.
Yeah.
So like you're so quick to move on. Like we obviously played Cambridge, and then we had our replay against Paul in the Trophy straight away on the Tuesday. So you don't really get a moment to think. I think as soon as the game finishes, you have a few hours, you enjoy that little period. But Sunday morning, I'm planning, and Carl and Rids, our assistant, we're all on the phone talking to each other, planning for the next game, because they just come so quick. We've had such a busy schedule over the last 10 days and it just gets even more with twice a week now, moving from Horsham to Beaconsfield. And yeah, it just comes so quick that you don't really get a moment to enjoy it, to be fair.
And as you say, that Paul Town fixture in the FA Trophy, that last round, I think it was one of the most rearranged ties in the history of the competition, wasn't it? The weather, it was on, off, on. And you again, you're trying to concentrate on the FA Cup. Eventually, what was it, 2-2 after normal time, then 4-1 win on penalties at Poole. We spoke to Anthony Johnson at Radcliffe earlier, and his side won through on penalties the last round too. And we often focus on the side who lose a shootout, but if spot kicks go well, it must add an amazing confidence boost to everybody at the club, all the players and coaching staff.
Yeah, it does. I mean, like we as we said, we try and do our homework as much as we can on everything. And me and Cole were really like lucky on the way through. I say lucky, we just seem to have a really good record on penalty shootouts. I mean, I think we played 3 of our 7 ties that we were away and we had to go through on penalties. And every time when you've got players that feel confident to step up and put you into the next round, it's great. Like, and obviously Mike Ecott on the night was the difference. But I mean, the lads that are taking the penalties, when we went and spoke to them and we had a picture in our head of who's going to take them, like no one bowed down. I think there's probably one that just said, yeah, I'll go last. But yeah, they were all quite confident and yeah, they were really in it. It was a tough game. I mean, we went 2-0 down and obviously we'd just... everything that just happened in the FA Cup, but to bounce back and get the result. And I felt like if the game had gone on for another 2 or 3 minutes, we probably would have nicked it because we were so on top. And then penalties are 50-50, aren't they? But I always back the lads, like they're confident. And if you miss a penalty, you miss a penalty. It's not the end of the world. But I try not to see it like that. I try and say it's like, look, if you take this penalty like, and we win it and we score and you go through, then... like you've made so many people happy. So look at it like that. Don't look at it on the negative side. Just try and be positive with it. And they were. And it was a great, great way to like stamp out the Cambridge defeat.
And of course, you're not going to fancy penalties on Saturday. You want to do it in normal time. But Bottom Meadow has become something of an old hand for these big matches. And this season, you've got that new state-of-the-art 3G surface laid at the start of the season. Bioflex, is this natural substance that's more eco-friendly, player-friendly than the rubber grain? Have you noticed any difference?
Yeah, I mean, the way the ball moves on it is definitely different to like your typical 3G. I mean, we had one at Larges Lane when we were there, when I was a player, and it certainly moves different. And I think it does catch maybe a few teams off guard because it's nice like, when you turn up and it's flat and you know your games are going to be on. It's like a massive positive. All the kids, like the fans after are on it. So that's great. But yeah, the surface definitely is different to your typical 3G, without a doubt.
Yeah, and I mentioned that in the league, you've hit form as well, just outside the playoffs at the moment. You won at a revitalised Dorchester Town midweek, a big 4-0 win at home to Chesham United at the weekend. You've done Wembley with the FA Vars. A trophy double would maybe be nice, but is promotion the ultimate aim?
Yeah, like the league is definitely our aim this year. We come so close last year and like we got in with a few, in with 6 games. I think we had a chance to go and win it and kick on and we didn't. And obviously, look, Truro and Western went up and they were the 2 teams that led the way all year. So I don't feel like we had any right, but we got we earned a right to be in that mix right at the end and it didn't happen. But yeah, promotion is always like league is what you're looking for. Do you know what I mean? The FA Cup, the trophy, it's great to have a run of them. It's great for momentum. You want to go as far as you can in every competition. That's why all teams build like squads, don't they? So it's definitely the top of our list is the league.
And we've already mentioned all those magical moments and big games already this season. So how important is the relationship that the two of you have as joint managers? Because all this football stuff has to go alongside your other life as well, doesn't it? Work, family, friends. And however exciting that all is, that's draining.
Yeah. I mean, look, we've both got kids a similar age. I've got 3 boys of my own, like twins, and then a 5-year-old. And Carl's got the same, like an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old. And yeah, I think like getting them involved, they're both like all of our kids, bar one, play football. So it's nice to have their moments and Yeah, it's draining. It is. It's hard. I'd love to say it's part time, but it's not. It's full time. But you only get in what get out what you put in, and it's a balance. I think you've got to try and get that balance right. I'm lucky to have such a supportive family, like especially my wife. My dad comes to all my games still. So yeah, it's a big part of mine and Cole's like history and growing up. So yeah, you just got to try and balance it as well as you can. But I think any manager would say that that's tough when you've got young kids as well.
And you got some idiot chasing you on a Thursday for an interview as well. It's
I wasn't going to say that. You said that, not me.
And, you know, from the first time you managed together, how has it changed both the way you interact and also the whole role of being a manager?
I think we've just had to like evolve, obviously, like as you step up through the leagues. Everything's different. It's a bit more tactical now. Like you've got to obviously watch and know your opponents. Mm-hmm. So hence why Lee Riddell, who's our assistant manager and coach, like he helps out. We all sit down and talk about it. We've got to try and split the load as much as we can. But yeah, we've had to, we've always got a picture in our mind of the way we do it and the way we're going to set out from the start of the year. And then we assess it after a few months and what we can improve on. And I think that's just how we've had to do it. But having like a good team, like a management team around you is really important. And we've got like, we're really lucky to have who we've got around us. So yeah, we're all off the same page. Me and Cole talk all the time as much as we talk to Lee and like our goalkeeper coach and like everything. So yeah, you just got to have the right people that are all on the same page and putting all the effort in.
And what about the joint manager thing? Still fairly unusual. You know, so we do speak to the odd one. We've had two sets this week, but you've got quite a consistent set of players, I guess, around you. But when new lads do come in, is it noticeably odd for them when they've not experienced joint gaffers before?
Do you know what? I've never asked. I've never asked them. I mean, I played under Neil and John at Slough and Godalming, like who they were joint managers. And I know John's doing it on his own and Bates has stepped back a little bit now. But yeah, I think you've both got your separate relationships with the lads, so it's good. Like we're good people. We want to work. We want to improve people, and yeah, we're on the same page of that. I, do you know what? I've never actually asked any of the lads what they think of it, but yeah, it's just something that I think people get used to with like really quickly. Where the group really helps it. The group of lads we've got a real treat to us and a real honour to work with. So I think as soon as they come in, it just feels like you're almost at home because you're just welcomed in straight away, and they want to see good players at the club, like all the management and the fans do as well. So I think it's just an easy transition if you're coming into the change room.
Yeah, now, and I'm fairly sad. I've got to say it's probably a non-league trait actually, but I do check out if you do the Ant and Dec thing. You know, always stand the same way round. You don't appear to have got to that level yet, but are you at the stage where you've known each other for so long, both as players, managers, mates, that you literally know what the other one's going to say in the dressing room or in an interview before they say it?
Yeah, I'd say that. We know each other like really well inside out. As I said, like we've played together. Well, sorry, as you said, we played together and managed together. And yeah, I think we enjoy working together. It's not easy like all the time, but winning games of football isn't. And we both want to be successful. We both got that drive, and yeah, we're both on the same page. And like, as long as it works, it works. We're never far away from where we want to go with it. And sometimes it's helpful to have more than one set of eyes. So yeah, I don't know. It's just natural. I think that's what makes it work. I think we do probably still stand like one side of each other. I mean, we never stand next to each other, actually.
I've noticed, yeah.
We don't. There's always a little bit of a separation, but I think we're just like on the same page about things most of the time. So, yeah, it works.
And what about now you're nearly a grown-up? Do you sort of see the traits of management in players that are coming through?
So what was that?
Do you see in the players that you've got at the moment? Can you see them some of them that might make it as a manager? Because were you always going to be a manager?
Do you know what? I was always told that I would. I think from about 25, you'd make a good manager. And I always asked my managers why. And yeah, I do see it in one or two one or two of the lads, and it's just, I think it's their man management skills, like the way they talk to people. Like, you can see, you don't have to be like 30, late 30s and like a bit older to do it. Some of the lads, they're so good with people, like saying the right things at the right time, being able to be positive with people and just give them little bits of information. Because I think a lot of the younger players now that come through the academies like understand the technical side of the game a lot, but it's not always about that. I think football's more, it's a mindset. So if you can get your head around being positive and like letting things go if they don't go your way and focusing on the next thing, I think that's really important. Yeah, and I do see it a lot in the lads that we got. They're all people, like people. Do you know what I mean? They get round each other and talk the game. And yeah, I do see a few managers out of our change room. I won't tell them who it is because they're holding me.
They'll be after your job.
Yeah, yeah, they'll put their CV in. They'll probably get it. But no, I do see like real leadership skills in all of our lads, to be fair.
But I think that's probably come from you guys. I mentioned the great performances that I've seen and heard about from this season. It does seem that you've got that magic that comes with successful teams where everybody's playing for one another.
Yeah, I think that's always been how I picked like a team that I was playing for, like, and a manager that I played for, because I think if you get that, that gets you through the hard times, but also like brings a lot of real intense training, like mindset. Like, the lads really put everything into training. No one comes in and like just goes through the motions. And I think that I think we've really seen that over the last like month or so. Like, we obviously started the season with a lot of injuries, like a lot of teams will have and stuff like that. And it does have its effects, but the way we've come through it, and like, especially our result on Tuesday away at Dorchester, which was a real tough game. Like, we had to dig deep, and seeing the character that we showed in more than just Tuesday's game, it's really starting to come forth of how strong we could be this year. We'd rather be higher up the table and everything like that, but I wouldn't trade it for the memories we made in the FA Cup, and obviously hopefully some more in the trophy. But obviously we've got a tough game against Horsham, who have also reached the first round and done really well for their club and got a good manager and good players. So yeah, looking forward to that.
It certainly is one of the most exciting looking ties in the FA Trophy this weekend. I wish you well with that. Wish you well for the rest of the season. And thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks, Tim. Always great to speak to you. Really appreciate it.
Time once again then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. And it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Executive editor at the Non-League Paper, it's Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Yeah, good. For another exciting week in Non-League. And it has been a very exciting week in Non-League. We've got to start, I guess, with some courageous Non-League performances this week in FA Cup replays. No giant killings. Maybe 10 years down the line, those actual results won't look so good on paper, but there was plenty of hearts won over by those watching on TV or those lucky enough to watch in person, and all the clubs doing Non-League proud.
Yeah, there was. There was some very gallant efforts. Certainly the two games on TV, at Horsham on the Tuesday night and Cray Valley on the Wednesday. The Horsham game is just unfortunate, really, that Barnsley started extremely fast and sort of put the game to bed, didn't they, really, by half time. And I think that says more about Barnsley and the professionalism that they've got, really, rather than Horsham's efforts. And the fact that Horsham kept going and had a gallant second half was full credit to them. And similarly, Cray Valley, when the penalty went in for 1-1 at half time, you started dreaming, didn't you? But Charlton, aren't on a big side in League One for no particular reason. Yeah. They're full of top players and got the job done in the end. But certainly hearing the comments of the managers afterwards, they were all very proud of their team's performance. It was the same in the game. I went to Forest Green Rovers to go and watch Scarborough, and I think it was just. It was just a game too far from Scarborough. Obviously, they came so close to beating Forest Green, didn't they, in the first game. It just didn't start well enough. And, by the time they sort of really knew that they were in a game, they were 3-0 down, and it was very difficult to get back from that. They come back well in the second half, but it was too little, too late. But still got two goals away from home. Lost 5-2, and the star man on the day was Troy Deeney, who knows what it takes to win an FA Cup tie. But it had a performance, and the credit also to the fans. You know, 280 Scarborough fans going, making the 6-hour trip down to Forest Green on a very cold Tuesday night. It was an unbelievable effort. And, that's what the FA Cup's all about. And it's a day they'll remember for a long time, not necessarily for the result, but the occasion itself. And, certainly that will stand their team and others who got to this stage of the competition in good stead for their league form.
Yeah, and, we were saying how wonderful it is that we've still got the replays at this level, and it gives the non-league clubs their opportunity, having done so well in those first ties. But it's a point that Steve McKim made in his post-match interviews yesterday, that most of those lads that turned out in for the non-league clubs in these FA Cup replays this week had worked during the day as well before putting in, playing in maybe their biggest game that they've ever played of football in that evening. And there's also all the media attraction, all your mates wanting a ticket, everybody pinging you. It's tiring being a non-league player or a non-league manager involved in one of these ties as well. So, credit to everybody just to get through it.
Yeah, it's just a huge budge about sort of games like that. As you say, about people wanting tickets and mates wanting extra passes commercial deals, yeah, or whatever. It just goes on and on. But I think that's what these clubs.
There's memories made for years, and the adrenaline. If you could bottle that and sort of inject it about the last week of March. It would do wonders for every football club.
That's right. I remember Bracknell last year when they played Ipswich, and obviously with the TV cameras going down and a 3,000 crowd, it literally transformed the place. And it was I was speaking to a couple of Bracknell fans who I know, and they were saying it's not like watching Bracknell Town. It was a circus, really, but that's what they enjoy. They just enjoy their big moment, seeing the likes of Ian Wright commentating on the pitch side or whatever for ITV or something. That sort of thing comes around sort of once in a lifetime, really. And it's great that the clubs like Horsham and Cray Valley have had their opportunity to do that. Ramsgate will get their turn in the second round at AFC Wimbledon. So they'll be relishing that as well. And a nice tie for them as well. Obviously, with it being a Monday night, not too far away. It's certainly doable for their Army of fans. And AFC Wimbledon's a lovely little ground to host an FA Cup tie. And they'll certainly be relishing that. And all the players as well. I think that they'll be booking their time off work now.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, as I said, we didn't get any giant killings in these replays, but we do, of course, have plenty of non-league representation in that second round, which is, again, will come around fast. The first weekend of December, York City, one of those won in an all non-league tie, beating Chester 2-1 midweek. They'd set up a second round TV tie on the Friday night against Wigan Athletic. And it's nice to see non-league in the TV shop window, isn't it? We've got Alfreton Town against Walsall on the box on Saturday, Eastleigh Reading and Wrexham Yeovil on the Sunday for Armchair and Clubhouse fans. And then, as you say, that Monday night TV serving of AFC Wimbledon Ramsgate. It's a great spotlight, but also you can't neglect the fact that the extra payout for being on TV, it's great money for non-league clubs too.
No, it certainly is, and that York tie really does stand out, wasn't it? That game on Tuesday night between York and Chester, the replay, that was a big game in many respects, and Chester took them all the way, as we knew they probably would. And you know, but the prize is just huge. You know, Wigan Athletic, the first tie of the weekend, Friday night telly. And that's great. It's obviously it's something that that York City supporters of a certain age have seen them before. But they'll certainly be relishing that. And as I say, sort of going down the list of the clubs, I think there's nine non-league clubs in the draw. But no all non-league tie. So all of them all are vying for third round places. That's right. Yeah, unfortunately, we haven't got any guaranteed third round ties. But there's certainly some real big ones to look out for. Obviously, we mentioned AFC Wimbledon. All the shot Stockport is a good one as well. That's one. You know, if you can get a big crowd down at the UBB, which I know they will. Aldershot flying at the moment. The crowds are coming back, which is great to see. And they're playing a Stockport side who are going even better in their league form. They're top of League Two, well supported as you know. And that's been moved to the Sunday as well. Eastleigh Reading is another one as well that really really takes my eye. Eastleigh a team you never know what they're going to do. Do you? They win one week, lose the next. But when they do win, they do look mightily impressive. And Reading are probably one of those teams that's just there for the taking. Yes. There at the moment, they're not going great guns.
If you're a Reading fan, I think an FA Cup tie at a non-league club is probably the last thing you wanted.
Yeah, they wouldn't fancy that at all. And Eastleigh can be quite an intimidating place to go down. You know, when they get the crowds behind them and when they're playing well as well, they've got some really good players who have played at that level, won't be overawed by the occasion. And I think you see a fancy that. But Reading, I don't think will.
Yeah, and there was obviously lots of excitement around the FA Cup. We also had the FA Vars third round draw. That's one to contemplate in a couple of weeks' time, really, isn't it? But there's what we got 32 ties left now in that competition. People are talking about Christmas coming up, but I can almost smell the Wembley turf at non-league finals day.
Yeah, they can. It was amazing, really, just to see sort of how quickly they've all sort of
whittled them down.
The last 64, it doesn't seem that long ago that we were having to trying to break up all the 120 odd ties or whatever to try and fit everyone in. But now we're down to the last 64, and as you say, it's really hotting up. This is the stage of the competition where they can really smell a Wembley run. It was interesting to see Newport Pagnell Town go out. That was obviously they were last year's finalists and the year before winners. They've had a great Vars run. That's unfortunately for them. That's over for another year. But it gives another team an opportunity to enjoy the success that they have. And it's really the all or nothing really in the Vars. It's almost impossible to put any kind of league form try and compare pubs because they're all in exactly the same boat. It literally is all on the day. They're all at the same level. Obviously, some leagues may be stronger than others at certain times. It's impossible to call, and I think that's what makes the Vars so good. As I say, there's so many teams all playing at the same level. And you really can't pit one against the other. It's all on the day, and what a prize at the end of it as well.
Indeed. And so we'll cover that in a couple of weeks' time, of course. But this weekend, it's the FA Trophy second round, and we've got joint managers this week on the show, speaking with Radcliffe and Bracknell Town ahead of their ties, which means that there's only 40 ties, but that means that there with some joint managers involved in that. There's over 80 managers with some pretty big decisions to make this weekend, because a win, as well as being a step closer to Wembley, there's also that potential for National League opposition if you get through to that next round. But you look down the list of those competing in the trophy this weekend, and many of them are doing so well in the league. And the question is, I guess, have they got the squads to compete on all fronts? And you know, what needs to be priority?
That's why, I mean, I think in that situation, certainly if you're Jono and Bernard Morley at Ratcliffe, it's a tough decision to make. Obviously, they're going so well in the league. Yes, they'd love to do well in the trophy. They'd love a big tie and to pit their wits against one of the National League big boys. But I mean, you know, if you do go strong and get a pick up a couple of injuries, obviously you're looking at another 90 minutes under the belt. Some of the players may need a rest. It's a difficult one, and the trophy over the years has suffered a little bit with clubs deciding to sort of weaken up a little bit and give young players or fringe players more of a go. And I think that has sort of done the competition much good over the years. But having said that, it's a competition that a lot of clubs will be looking at as a potential big prize. Again, you have to look at Bromley last year. I mean, the day out that they had at Wembley, they'll never forget that. And you know that victory, and Halifax Town as well, winners, of course. Those fans will never forget that day, and that was after a pretty average season. So it is possible, and there's clubs also at step two and step three that will also fancy their chances. We've seen Hornchurch, haven't we? We've seen Hereford get to the semi-final. Brackley beat Bromley, didn't they, two or three years ago? So it's very, very possible. And
this weekend, it is only the second round, and we haven't got that step one that the National League side's in there yet. But you look at some of those big sides. We've already spoken on the show about Bracknell, Horsham, Varsley Celtic, Ratcliffe. They're big games in their own right. But you look as well, who we got? Chorley, Scarborough, Curzon, Aston, Matlock, the Derby down, Whitehawk, Lewis, Spennymoor Town, Mickleover Sports, who are obviously super informed. And of course, then you've got the massive game, Torquay United, Yeovil Town.
Yeah, they'll fancy that, won't they, down on the southwest. But not so much Torquay, because their rivals, Yeovil, are going unbelievably well at the moment, aren't they? I think 15 straight wins for Mark Cooper's men. They beat Torquay away from home 3-1, I think it was, just a week or so ago. So they'll go there with absolutely no fear. And, Torquay obviously not having the best of times at the moment. One win against Yeovil could all of a sudden turn fortunes for them. And I think that's what the FA Trophy can do. You know, you can give your team a little bit of extra spice or confidence going into the Christmas period. And you know, all of a sudden after one good result, you know, things might not look as bleak as they probably might do otherwise. So yeah, it's a good opportunity really for clubs to do that, and Torquay in particular will be looking at that tie and will want to get a bit of revenge on their old rivals who seem to be running away with it in the National League South.
Yeah, and probably but then want to get through and maybe pit their wits against the National League sides in their next round. Of course, no National League sides in the trophy yet, so they're all in league action. And at the top of the National League, Chesterfield obviously now top and 5 points clear with a game in hand after that 4-2 win last weekend over Barnet. But Chesterfield have an interesting game this weekend away at Southend United. The Shrimpers, probably already the most bare-bones squad of all of those in the National League, are three players down due to it being an international weekend and their players having call-ups.
Oh, it doesn't rain, does it? You just have to. I don't know how many players they're going to have. They're going to have. They've had the mercy on Saturday, but I don't think they'll be able to fill a full bench, will they? And they're certainly going to need to against a Chesterfield side who are absolutely flying, aren't they? And that 4-2 victory was a real statement. Bearing in mind, Barnet scored their two goals in injury time. All four goals come in the second half. Paul Cook's men really do know how to kick on, and they just seem to have the the right blend, and at the moment they're strong at the back, and they've got some great creativity with the likes of lots of Cole Clough and Mandeville and Armando Dobra, and then they've got Will Grigg up front, who's starting to bang in the goals on a regular basis. They're looking pretty imperious. And Southend United, on their day, we all know what they can do on their day, and they've proved it time and time again. And they've got their fan base behind them. That they're a pretty formidable outfit as well, and I just hope that they can get enough players on the pitch really to give Chesterfield a game. If they could, then I think we're in for a real classic this weekend.
Yeah, classic this weekend. There seems to be classics every, I was going to say every weekend, but also during the week as well. And National North, we got Tamworth back on top. Scunthorpe beaten midweek by Kings Lynn, but the result of the week: Chorley 8, Darlington 0. That's a long journey home.
It is a long journey home, especially when you concede that goals. Yeah, it's not going too great for Darlington. Although I did see that a player sent off, didn't after about 5 minutes. Yeah. That's the last thing you need, isn't it? When you're up against a Chorley side who have found their form of late, and 8-0 doesn't look good. As you say, it was a. It's a long trip home. They've got a few problems, Darlington, haven't they? They're at the wrong end of the table. I think there's a few things that need to be ironed out there. I really hope they can sort themselves out, because that's a big club. You know, it wasn't so long ago that they were on top of that table, and we were talking about possibly getting into the National League. Something's not gone right there. But hopefully they can pick themselves up, but they're certainly going to need to fast if they're going to get that 8-0 out of their system.
But it's those small margins that the managers always talk about. I don't think fans always realise that there's so many small margins off the field as well. Yeah, I mean, in recent weeks we've been discussing Nuneaton Borough. They ahead of last weekend, it was potentially their last ever game. Then we see, I think, Stockport County fans rallied round, didn't they? Bought some tickets to the game that they weren't going to attend. That's seen them ticking along through. They're committed for at least another couple of games to see themselves through. There's always things going on. I mean, this week we also saw three directors resign at Bromsgrove Sporting over a disagreement of vision. Normally it's the managers that are disagreeing over the vision, and we're hearing it happens in boardrooms. But it does happen in boardrooms time and time again. There really is. I mean, we talk about blockbuster movies. There's a whole soap opera that could be written behind the scenes about football clubs.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, there's some weeks where we could fill the NLP three times over, and if we had the manpower, then we really would. It's crazy. I mean, the Nuneaton story obviously broke last week, and obviously didn't really know sort of how to approach it. It was obviously potentially a huge story for a very proud and famous football club, and a very, very sad story too, obviously. And thankfully, it wasn't the last match of their history. No, as you say, they've committed to another two. Hopefully, some things can be put in place. There was a lovely line, wasn't it, about the Stockport County fans who won them a few tickets. And it is times like this when football does come together, and non-league football in particular does come together to each other's aid, and that was a lovely story. And you get Bromsgrove Sporting, a club just down the road from me, I know pretty well, and unfortunately things are not going to plan there. So that's a real sleeping giant in the Southern League. They built themselves up nicely since the days of Bromsgrove Rovers going under. What a famous non-league name that is, and they were going nicely, but fortunately they've hit a bit of a crossroads, and I just hope that their man Nuneaton, I'd say they're not too far in the way of distance between them, both on the field and off it. Just lost their way a little bit. I just hope that they can they can sort themselves out because they're two big names in non-league football that we need to protect, really.
Yeah, but again, those sliding doors moments, those, you know, small margins and all that sort of thing. You know, in recent weeks, we've been discussing the issues that Scunthorpe United have been facing. And then today, they announced that contracts have been exchanged as planned for the purchase of Glanford Park. The new board and that have been sort of taking on everything and trying to secure the immediate future of the club, which it appears they have done. And behind the scenes, this is what I say, the people working tirelessly behind the scenes. We hear it when, you know, when we have these big FA Cup ties of all the people running around, scurrying around like little mice in Cinderella or whatever. But it's happening day in, day out at football clubs. And, you know, I'm constantly saying there's a number of clubs that are on these knife edges that we don't necessarily hear about. We hear about these ones and then we hear, you know, lots of people working very hard. They were on the precipice, weren't they? Yeah, Scunthorpe United were, you know, were nearly in the similar position that we've just been discussing about Nuneaton Borough. And now the club anticipate completion towards the back end of November of the purchase of Glanford Park, their current home stadium, which must give them a lot more security going forward and planning as a football club.
Yeah, it's great news. Great news for everyone at Scunthorpe. I must admit, I was very fearful when this whole. I think they did actually move out of Scunthorpe Park, didn't they? For a few days, they played one game. I think as a grand share. Great to see them back. It's their home. It's the home of the town's football club, and a very famous home it is too. It's where the fans feel like being at home, and unfortunately, obviously, I think you could probably run another show if you wanted to talk about sort of what's been going on down there. It seems to be a bit of a soap opera, isn't it? But thankfully, the chairman who came in, name escapes me, I'm really sorry, come the last few weeks seems to have done a great job in patching things up and pulling people together for the sake of the town and the community and the fans. And it looks like there could be a happy resolution there for everyone. So well done, everyone at Scunthorpe. And they're going well on the pitch as well.
Yep.
So hopefully things can, a brighter future can be on the cards for them.
Yeah, well, there is this, you know, it's always the fine margins, the knife edge that the clubs always live on, and managers too. I mean, you wouldn't. I'd imagine if you were putting a mortgage application together or something like that, and you put down Football Manager, the mortgage lender's not going to look too kindly on that as a long-term career. I mean, we've seen some big names this week, haven't we? Andy Lees has gone at Kettering, and then Darren Sahl shown the door at Woking after their 3-2 defeat at Oxford City. And what a difference a year makes.
Yeah, I must admit, I was amazed by that. I know things haven't been great for Woking, but they've also had a lot of problems with injuries and availability. But losing at Ramsgate in the FA Cup, obviously, and then Oxford City, but they obviously decided it was time to pull the trigger. I thought he had a little bit more time in the bank after what he did for the club last year. I like Darren Sahl. I think like his methods and his ideology of the game. I think he talks a lot of sense. And I didn't see that coming. I really didn't. I know there was a lot of bit of talk from the fans who have been a little bit disappointed with the club's form, but they're sat mid table and they're in a league with the clubs with a lot more resources than they have, and I don't even think they're fully full time yet, are they? I don't know, but I thought that was a little bit premature. I don't think they're going to get anyone as knowledgeable as Darren Sahl. I might be wrong in that, and you know, I hope for Woking's sake I am. But I just thought that was a that was a big, big decision to make. A very surprising decision.
It's an interesting one because
they also said that Ian Dyer is taking over.
Yeah, yeah. I think Ian Dyer is going to take that on, isn't he? For the they've got two big games that, you know, even. I don't know, even if they brought in the greatest manager of all time, what they got? They got Oldham and Chesterfield as the next two games. And we know Mickey Mellon's gone in at Oldham, changing things around. And Chesterfield, we've already discussed. It's not as if... I don't think... Unless they're going to get an impact on those results in these next two games.
Yeah, that was another thing. Timing as well. I didn't quite get the timing. It's not as if that, not as if Woking are that far adrift that they have to act now or relinquish maybe a playoff place. It's a long, long way to go. And, they're not a million miles off it. As you say, they've got two huge games coming up. Oldham, a club that's not too far away from them in terms of league position. And then Chesterfield, you need to be up your mettle to come up against a club like Chesterfield and not really be in disarray. And it looks like they're going to be in disarray against a Chesterfield side who we've already said are going so well. To be honest, I didn't get that at all. I didn't get why they felt that they needed to pull the trigger. Maybe they've got something in mind, but surely they would put it in place now. I don't really see what good that would do.
It does sort of shout though about modern football, doesn't it? Because as you say, Woking mid table in the National League, they had a great season under Darren last year, and then you look the other sort of big change this week, I guess, is at Folkestone Invicta. They are literally bang in mid table. They're 11th in the ESPN Premier. And they've parted ways with Roland Edge and Michael Everett. They've been in the job about a year. They had big shoes to fill by following Neil Cugley, of course. But they're mid-table. We're 15 games into the season. Still plenty to play for. They're not out of the shout of playoffs. They're not out of the shout of dropping down. But it does seem that we used to report on managers being parting ways when they were struggling around the relegation zone. Now, if they're not battling for playoff places before Christmas, then, it seems that changes need to be made.
Yeah, again, this was another one that come from nowhere. And the irony of this, obviously, is, the fact that Neil Cugley was in the job for so long, and the club, that got so much credence from the fact that he'd been they've had the same manager for so long. Neil's gone upstairs in a directorial role and overseeing these two managers who have done okay, as you say, in the mid table. I think they got a 1-1 draw on Saturday, and then they're gone. all of a sudden they've gone, and they've reacted very quickly. Obviously, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. Maybe there's a bit more to it. I thought they probably would be. They're obviously not a club who pull the trigger for no particular reason. But very strange. And as you say, it's a sign of sort of where we are at the moment. The pressures on non-league boards are bigger than ever, and we're in a situation where a couple of bad results does put people under pressure, and it never really used to be like that, did it? But now all of a sudden the need for getting regular results on a consistent basis is bigger than ever, and the chairman these days aren't afraid to push the panic button. And unfortunately, being a football manager is not the best place for some at the moment. There's a lot of people looking over their shoulders. It's sad, really, but it's football, as managers say.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And we're talking Thursday evening. I'm sure by by the time you write the final lines for the non-league paper on Saturday evening to go out Sunday morning, there'll unfortunately probably be some more changes as well. We'll have FA Trophy, league action, I'm sure some FA Cup reaction, maybe FA Vars draw reaction as well. Anything else that we can look out for in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, we've not got a lot of room for much else. There's so much to talk about. Obviously, the FA Cup, the disappointments really of the week on the face of it. Given the excitement, we've got stuff from each of the managers involved in that. Obviously, plenty of trophy stuff. We're going to turn our attentions to that for the next few days. Looking ahead to the Vars, Matt Badcock's got a nice interview with Marcus Law, who's he's someone looking for a job at the same time that Kettering are looking to apply. Obviously, that's his old club. I wonder what's going to happen there. But shoot me down if you shoot me down if you like. But obviously, that's a pairing that's got a lot of success over the years, so who knows? It may happen again.
Well, it may happen again. What will happen again is we'll buy the non-league paper on Sunday, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon. John Couch, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thank you very much, sir.
And that is it once again for this week's Bumper Show. I hope you've all enjoyed it. Thanks as ever to all of my guests. Good luck to all involved in the FA Trophy this weekend. Big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget you can follow us, get involved on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L, and find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Castbox, iHeart, GeoSouthern, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe then. Enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.